All right, pleasure to have everyone back with us. We get ready for baseball tonight. Charlie Morton, tough customer, going for the Braves. And on the Giants side, it'll probably be Alex Wood and a host of others. Bruce Jenkins, good afternoon. How are you?
Doing well, thanks, Marty.
Well, we had one for the ages last night, Bruce, and I called it the It Game. I said this is the one that brings everyone together. The place went nuts. It was Michael Morse all over again.
Yeah, I mean, just once again, it's like they outdo themselves. it was very Giants in so many ways. You know, we've talked about Gabe Kapler. He's not really worried about the top of the 12th. You know, with his maneuvering, he pinch hits Solano for Yastrzemski. You know, next thing you know, it's up to Gausman with a bat in his hands. But you know, Solano homers to keep the game alive down to his last strike. And Gausman gets up there, and he's becoming kind of a decent hitter. I love what he said, how this is one of his great thrills, being up there with the crowd going nuts, you know, because he's got the bat in his hands. And this is one reason I can't stand the DH, is everybody who plays ball should have the bat in their hands three or four times a game, because that's just the game. That's the way the game is played. And for him to come through like that was just an amazing thing all around.
Well, Gausman and Webb, they've got a nice little thing going back and forth.
Yeah.
They're very good quotes after the game. Gausman got the good guy award. And as when I said to Susan, I thought Webb, should have gone toe-to-toe with him. And she said next year for Webb.
Yeah, I would imagine so. Gausman, he reminds me a little bit of Barry Zito when he hits. He's certainly not a great hitter, but he's always snapping these little grounders or low liners down the left field line, you know, the other way, just barely keeping it fair. But last night he got around on a 3-2 pitch that he needed to keep put in the air and not, you know, hit into a double play or whatever, and just crazy, crazy stuff.
So Buehler loses last night, and I watched it, Bruce, and I thought Buehler, you know, kind of, he wasn't as bad as he was against the Giants, but he didn't look like he does in May, I'll tell you that. And, of course, Scherzer today, 7 shutout innings. The Dodgers already won. But this Dodger-Giant thing going down the stretch, this is classic playoff baseball. For me, the playoffs have started. It's day-to-day now.
Oh, yeah, there's no question. And there's nothing like scoreboard watching, especially when the Dodgers are involved. You know, how are they doing? It's day-by-day. It's been close already for weeks. They can't shake the Dodgers, and that's a terrific thing. It keeps the suspense going, just in a riveting fashion, right to the end. Nobody's going to win this by 4 games. It might even come down to a Monday game number 163 at Oracle to see who wins the division.
Wouldn't that be? I mean, look, that can happen. You know, crazy. You know, that actually can happen. Boy, what a season this 2021 is. It's one for the ages. But last night for me, that was, it was 4-2. And look, you've been a beat writer. You know what it is. 4-2. You've written your story.
Yeah.
It's 2 out. You're ready to go home. And not so fast.
Yeah, that's the real test of a beat writer, to have to be able to, as soon as that thing happens and your first 4 paragraphs are toast, to be able to just completely forget about it and flip the switch and get in the whole other frame of mind of what just happened and write it all around the other team winning, and then try to make it transition into the stuff you've got below that's going to have to suffice for this edition anyway. And it's a great exercise. I really loved doing that for years. I'm glad I don't do it now. I'm heading toward the finish line, but it really is for journalistic talents. I think, you know, anybody who gets to be a beat writer and covers night games, it really is a great challenge and very, very stimulating.
Yeah, people don't realize it. What was your first year as a beat writer?
1980. I covered most of the season for the A's and a little bit of Giants. They'd already given me my big break by letting me cover the 1979 World Series, and I did like the next 25 of those.
So how did you file a story? Did you type it out and then send it? Well, how'd you do it?
Well, when I first started with the Chronicle and going out there just on very sporadic occasions, you'd have a typewriter, you'd rip out the sheet, and you'd hand it to a Western Union operator hovering over your shoulder.
Really?
Yeah, and then you know, 1981 was the first really full-on beat writing season I had with covering Billy Martin's A's, which was very memorable. And we had all manner of devices. We had a thing where you stick your typewritten sheet in, and it rolls around in a machine, and it pops out on the other end. And the Radio Shack had a very popular computer that was kind of unwieldy, but a lot of people like to use that. And there's a thing like this thing called the Porta Bubble, which looks like a little television set, which I really liked. It was really a drag to lug around. And, you know, in those days, you didn't have everything in your phone or at your disposal on the Internet. And I'd have all these research books, and my Porta Bubble looked like I was going to Yugoslavia for a month.
I remember Ray Ratto. Remember how many pens he had?
Oh, yeah, he's got a pen for everything. You wonder, it's not just the players. I think it might be you know, the insignia on their shoes. I mean, he's got a color for every occasion.
Yeah, those are the days. That was not an easy job, but I'd love to see some of the, and Kerry's listening to our interview. I'd love to see some of the young guys today do what you guys did. It's amazing. Hey, during the week, though, Roberto Clemente, we've touched on this before. That number 21 should be retired, the Roberto Clemente day. Some people wore it, some didn't. I'd like to see baseball make it uniform.
Yeah, I kind of go back and forth on that. Obviously, you know, he's more than an iconic figure. He means so much in so many ways, but to me, I think it's just as special for me. I wouldn't dole it out, you know, randomly. But I think it'd be very special if some kid came out of Puerto Rico who idolized Clemente and wore it, and it really stood out. Mm-hmm. You know, and to keep the number alive, to retire it outright, I'd hate to see it disappear. I'd hate to see 24 or 44 or 32 or whatever disappear. I'd rather see it come to life at times.
Okay. All right. That's legitimate. We'll see. I just like the idea of him being acknowledged all over.
And maybe, well, no question.
Yeah, maybe that's the, I think that's the bottom line of this whole thing. How do you like Vlad Jr.? He could be a Triple Crown winner. How about that?
Jeez. He's absolutely raking. He's just destroying the ball. And great to the opposite field. So much like his dad. He can hit. He's not quite as wild up there. He's got a little more discipline, but he has incredible power to right field, to all fields, of course. And, you know, if he wins that Triple Crown, he'd have an awful strong argument for the MVP. But, you know, you've got Ohtani. And now Ohtani's going to pitch tomorrow after it looked like they might rule him out as a pitcher. He's back on the hill tomorrow. Not that his case needs any strengthening, but that to me is Ohtani and Salvador Perez and Vlad Guerrero. That's one of the most interesting home run races ever. I mean, that's up there with Mantle and Maris and McGuire and Sosa. You know, without the controversy that those two have generated, just that's an original group there.
Yeah, and I don't think we saw that coming, you and I. I mean, we've been on Perez since very early on. I know he got off to a great start, and I talked about him as a Hall of Famer. And I think he's getting that momentum right now. But those three we really didn't count on doing it, and they came out of nowhere. And that's the beauty of baseball. You know, we thought it'd be the Yankees. I'll tell you one thing about the Yankees, Bruce. With Gallo, Stanton, and Judge, they're going to strike out, the three of them will strike out 600 times. Now, they've got a ton of home runs. They do. They're fourth, I think, in the majors in home runs. But they only score like 4.2 or 3 runs per game because they don't do anything else other than strike out and hit home runs, where the Giants are different. The Giants can walk, and they get on base and make things happen. But the Yankees, I just want to bring up that point, strikeouts like crazy. They're not scoring enough runs.
No, I think they lost again today. They lost big today.
Oh, did they? Okay.
To Cleveland, but yeah, I mean, if you get the Yankees in a wild card game, you either get pummeled 12-0 in a barrage of 500-foot homers, or you just bury them. You know, they don't play the game particularly smart in a lot of positions on the field, and if those guys are just whiffing, you're pretty much in charge.
Yeah, it's incredible. And Gallo, I don't think they're going to retain him. I think I could be wrong. I think he's a free agent, or they'll trade him or something. But a lot of strikeouts for them. How do you like the Cardinals? And, you know, Goldschmidt, Arenado, and this O'Neill. Have you seen O'Neill play, Bruce?
Yeah, I'm going to stop by one of his forearm tune-up centers.
You got to paint your uniform on, though.
Yeah, I've been high on the Cardinals all year. I think if you've tracked our conversations as much as I have miscalculated some teams, I've just, of course, I always like the Cardinals anyway, just predisposed to liking them. But, Wainwright's been great. Arenado's been fantastic. Yadier Molina, Goldschmidt, I mean, the veteran presence is great. And then they got the infusion of younger guys with Harrison Bader and Colton Wong. And Tyler O'Neill, who really does look like he just won a big-time bodybuilding contest, but he can actually reach his arms above his head, and he's actually pretty fluid. He's a very good defensive player. He's made some heroic catches and got a nice swing. So you don't see many guys built like that, but he fits into the whole package. And as we've said, the bullpen is a big deal. But if they were to sneak into the wild card, that wouldn't be really a shock to anybody, I don't think.
No, not. Oh, no. I think they've got the upper hand right now, and their bullpen has settled in. And Arenado, Goldschmidt, and O'Neill are legit with Molina. And the shortstop Sosa. Have you seen Sosa play at all?
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah. And John Rooney is coming up later in the show, but in chatting with John during the week, he says Sosa's one of the. Ricky Horton said he's one of these guys at short. He replaced DeYoung, who wasn't doing much at all.
Yeah,
he does something every day, either it's a fielding play or a hitting play. And I don't know if you saw it the other day, but he spun around and threw to first base and hit the umpire in the head.
Yeah, I did see that. Yeah, that's a big spot for him to come in on that club to do, you know, in the position they're in. But once again, I like Tommy Edman, too. That's a very fun team to watch.
Oh, no, they're trouble. If you get them in a wild card game with Wainwright and the bullpen, they figured it out. And I saw it last night with Castillo and the Reds against the Dodgers. I said, what if this was a wild card game? And Castillo was fabulous last night. And Buehler was good but not perfect. And all of a sudden, it's a 3-0 game, and the Dodgers get beaten. I'll see you later. I'll see you in Vero Beach, as they say.
I'm telling you, if they can line up Castillo, if they get into that game, like you say, he was once in Giants property, but he really lit it up. That was probably his best start of the season. And, you know, Sonny Gray could pitch that game, too. He's had some good outings. So I've been pretty high on the Reds down the stretch here, and they haven't been at all good, and at least not consistent, but they're right there, and that Castillo's outing and beating the Dodgers like that really gave him some life.
It's a good 2 weeks of baseball coming up here because nothing is settled, and as much the Dodgers did win today behind Scherzer, and nothing's settled, and the Giants really have to just keep winning, and the Braves are a good team. How do you like that third baseman, Riley? He's something, isn't he?
Yeah, he's really, really good. That's a great team, and we've said this a few times, but it's a real shame they don't have Acuna because he really rounds out a tremendously dangerous lineup, you know, all the way down to DiNarno and Swanson, and obviously Freddie Freeman, Ozzy Albies is great, and Adam Duvall. Every year he gets a little better. All of a sudden he's one of the big RBI guys in either league. Just very, very clutch hitter and very entertaining. That's a heck of a win for the Giants to be down to your last strike against those guys. But the Braves could bounce back and thump them today.
No, and how about, look, Rodgers comes in and he's been, he's given up 3 homers in 71 appearances and 1 out. But Darno, maybe the most unlikely guy, knocks one out and all of a sudden you're losing 5-4.
Yeah, Rodgers. For one of the few times we've seen, especially in the last couple of months, his pitches were coming straight. They were landing in the wheelhouse. You know, the balls were hit hard consistently. He wasn't hitting the corners. When he does that, he's just mystifying, really, if you're up there, righty or lefty. But he was a little bit off, and it didn't take much, and they jumped all over him. And, DiNarno hit that 3-run bomb there. But I don't expect that to. I don't think he's going to be. He's going to have many outings like that. I think Rodgers has come way too far. He's really confident, and the thing that's going on there is if McGee's got an oblique, if it's like a lot of obliques, we might not see him again.
Again,
maybe it's not so bad, and they're just trying to give him a little bit of a break on the IL, and he comes back soon. But that's a curious and potentially dangerous injury.
Yeah. Hey, Bob Lurie gets honored today at the Wall of Fame. Your thoughts on Bob Lurie?
Wonderful man. You know, he was running the club when I first got to the Chronicle and started going out to the park and meeting people. And I was always extremely impressed by, you know, he's obviously very quite wealthy and successful, but he was just so quiet and soft spoken. He didn't wear his wealth in any kind of arrogant way, and he treated people really well. And I felt bad when the team almost moved to St. Petersburg. You know, I hit him pretty good in the paper. You had to. It looked like the Giants were leaving, but, you know, they didn't. And he survived that, and he's certainly, you know, when he stepped in and at a time when it came time to own the club, you know, he was there then, and he's an important figure in the team's history. It almost seems a little bit late to be doing this, but it's not too late, and he's certainly well-deserving.
No, he's a critical person because wasn't it Labatt's beer? Wasn't it Toronto?
Yeah, Toronto was in there too, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that club was going to Toronto, and Horace was basically bankrupt. And what Bob said, and we played a short interview I did with him. I visited him a few years ago at his home in Palm Springs. And he said when he got the club, the National League had already taken over the Giants.
Yeah.
And he inherited the great Speck Richardson as his general manager. Remember him?
Oh, my God. Absolutely. I can still see him on the dance floor at the New York Sheraton making a fool of himself. he also bailed me out of a situation in Houston where I had a rental car, and I had a little bump and run with a motorcycle guy, and it was all coming down on me, and the cops were going to haul me off without even hearing my side of the story. And it's not going to be a good day or a couple days for me. And Jim Street was there, and he said, "Well, call Speck," and we're in Houston.
Okay.
So. Yeah, and so it turned in my favor in a big hurry, let's put it that way. I didn't even miss the pregame that night.
Wow. Well, Speck Richardson, he was a character. He was a Houston Astros general manager. And, you know, always kind of a, you know, soft-spoken Texas drawl kind of guy. You never knew if he knew what he was talking about, I guess. But the Giants.
He had a big hat and a lot of cattle.
Yeah, he did. So Bob Lurie, I'm glad for him. And as I've said in many years, he should have a statue. Horace Stoneham should have one. And Peter McGowan should have one. And they should create some part of the ballpark for ownership.
I agree with that. Absolutely. Yeah.
People understand. This is an anniversary, 2019. God, the time goes so quickly, but this is the day that Bochy got his 2000th win. How about that?
Oh, geez. Yeah, that's everything you in your memory about Bochy is great. You know, it really is. There aren't any sort of bad episodes in the book you've got written in your head. Going right down to the farewell day was just so perfect. And he left the game at not just a perfect time from a baseball sense, but with the pandemic coming, he was not a part of that. And he's out there fishing and doing whatever else he's doing. He and his wife are enjoying the good life. And, it's interesting, too, because, I mean, his name is coming up a little bit now. So somebody asked the other day, you think he'd manage the Mets? I go, boy, I don't think so.
I don't think he'd wade
into that. I mean, every time you turn around, if some executive is, you know, some sexual misbehavior or a rude tweet or a DUI or some such, you know, shenanigans, and it's just a mess, really. And the team is, there's always a big circus going on there. He doesn't need that. Now, San Diego, that would be a different story.
You think he would consider it in San Diego?
I mean, from what I know about him, I mean, he's done it before, and the way he says that he's not ruling it out, you know that something's going through his head. I don't think he'd come back here. He's sort of done that, and, you know, that these guys have moved on, but he managed the Padres. He lived down there. He really liked it there. He took them to the World Series. He's well-regarded, and if they don't make the playoffs, you know, that's not a good thing for Jace Tingler, so I could see it.
Okay. Boy, that would be interesting. I think I owe Kerry Crowley dinner in Milan if that happens. When he brought it up.
Why not? Yeah. Better that than Gilroy, I always say.
I said there's no chance. So maybe there is. We'll see. Bruce Bochy, we'll see what he does with that. One other thing that I know this is a historical moment that we weren't going to really talk about, but I like it. Ray Washburn no-hits the Giants, and that wasn't such a big deal in today's day. But the night before, Gaylord Perry no-hit the Cards. And I don't know. I said, boy, that was baseball in 1968, and I think the Cards had just clinched, so I'm not sure they were ready to play baseball anyway.
Yeah, it's so funny because, you know, 68, I mean, my God, the Cardinals, they're coming off a World Series year and going to another one. And you know, they had that great, you know, Brock Flood, Maris Cepeda all the way down the line, fantastic team. And Gaylord Perry, for him to no-hit those guys is sensational. You know, the Giants were loaded, too. You know, Mays was still in his prime. I'm not sure who was playing for either side in those no-hitters. I mean, there might have been a couple guys sitting out or whatever. But in 68, everybody was Ray Washburn.
Amazing.
You were lucky to hit, I think the league-leading hitter in the American League was like 301.
Yeah, it was Carl Yastrzemski.
Yeah.
Come on. Yeah, 301. Yeah. Amazing. Danny Cater came in second at 296, I think.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken. Boy, what a time for baseball. This is fun. And Morton today, I always say if he hits somebody, you know he's on. This is a guy who likes to pitch inside. He likes to hit you. And but for this guy Adams from San Diego, Morton would be leading the league with hit batsmen. So we'll see what happens tonight. But it's a good game. Braves-Giants, a good matchup.
Oh, God, you bet. A real treat. This is what we're going to have, you know, right down to the finish. I mean, you know, a little bit of little Colorado and Arizona mix in there, but a lot more San Diego coming up, and the Dodgers are going to win 5 out of 6, you know, every time, and it's going to be beautiful.
Classic baseball. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
All right, talk to you in the morning. Thanks, Bruce.
Great. Sounds good, Marty.
Okay, that is Bruce Jenkins. Always a pleasure. All right, we'll take a break. More coming up next. John Rooney is next. He is a play-by-play voice, the radio voice of the St. Louis Cardinals. We're going to talk some Cardinal baseball here. They could be in the Giants' future one way or another. Who knows? They're a team on a roll right now. We'll learn more about them right after these messages.